Now, as we mentioned earlier, the WHO, or World Health Organization, recently recognized gaming disorder as a mental health condition. So is this based on sound science, or are we turning an everyday behavior into a disease, or even providing parents of spoilt children with an excuse for their behavior? Gaming is a multi-billion dollar industry. It has a bigger turnover than Hollywood, and it is enjoyed by millions of children and adults all over the world. So what's the correct answer? Well, Louise Theodosiou is a consultant child and adolescent psychiatrist. She works with the Royal College of Psychiatrists in the UK. What are the WHO actually saying, Louise?
As we've heard before, gambling is about a narrowing of behaviour. And what gaming disorder from the World Health Organization talks about is people who have a pattern of gaming where they're losing control of their gaming. They're giving increased priority to gaming and carrying on gaming despite negative consequences. And one of the things that WHO emphasizes is the fact that actually there's an impact on people's lives. Kids are struggling with their education, they're not maintaining enough sleep, there's an impact on how healthy they are, and their social interactions in the real world are suffering. So it's about that impact on life and about the fact that this is carrying on for over 12 months. So we're looking to see that impact and that narrowing of behaviour.
That seems to tick most of the boxes highlighted by Amy Milton a few minutes ago on what would be classified as an addiction.
I would agree that it does. And I think one of the brilliant things about the announcement is that we've now starting to have a clear definition that will mean that we can focus our research more clearly. As I'm sure you're aware, the American diagnostic system has had slightly different definition, but a very similar condition, internet gaming, as an area of concern for about 5 years. And if we look at the literature, we can see that there's been an increasing body of literature developing for almost 20 years now. So that situation of problematic internet use and problematic gaming use has been around and is gathering momentum. And I think that's what makes this announcement so important.
Now, Brian Roth, when we opened this previous part of the programme, said that for millions of people, painkillers are a wonderful thing that have helped them over a painful episode, and they're only an issue for a small minority. In my introduction to you, I pointed out that millions of adults and children use gaming as a diversion, as almost therapy. It's a stimulus, it's a distraction, it's a way to relax, and they do it quite healthily. So can we tell who are going to be the people for whom it is going to become a problem?
I think that's an excellent question. And just to emphasise, yes, I think gaming can be very positive. I think it can actually be something that, in very short and very controlled way, can really be a socially beneficial thing for children. And I think the internet overall has huge benefits for mental health practice. And it's about finding that balance. It's about that moderation. And as you've said, lots of people benefit from painkillers. Lots of people benefit from gaming, but they probably are doing it in the context of lots of other experiences at the same time. And it is about that group of people who lose control of their gaming. And yes, while we are still needing to do more research, there do seem to be some of the same brain areas that were identified in the piece about addiction that are study areas that we need to look at more in people who have gaming difficulties. And there does seem to be a connection with people who, for example, have got higher, who are suffering from depression and maybe have developmental conditions such as ADHD and some of the anxiety conditions. So the fantastic thing is that now that we've got this definition of gaming disorder, we can start to narrow down our studies and to identify those groups of people more clearly and identify how we can recognise them early. Because that's the other good thing about having this definition of gaming disorder is by having a definition of depression in that same diagnostic classification, people like myself can help teachers and other people look at kids who might be at risk of getting depression. We can start to do the same thing now with gaming disorder.
Are there any sort of broad categories that the people who are susceptible tend to fall into? More boys than girls, teenagers than younger children? Do you have any idea?
What's interesting is that there does seem to be a slightly more boys than girls. But then what's interesting is if you look at the studies and a number of the studies, boys are overrepresented. What's also interesting is that a number of the studies have concentrated on preteens, teens and university students. And yet a lot of people who may be struggling with their gaming may actually be older than that. So I think that's something else that we probably need to look at overall is to check that everybody who can potentially be affected is actually included in those research studies.
And if we follow up these people, say we identify someone who clearly has a big problem, how do we help them?
What we need to do is we need to, I suppose, first of all, make sure that there is that opportunity to have that dialogue with people. We need there to be more information. That's why programs like this are so important, so that families, loved ones, carers can be identifying that people maybe are at risk because of their gaming. Then what we need to do is we need to make sure that people know who to talk to, speak to your GP. What we know is because of that connection with some of the mental health needs that I was talking about before, GPs can be really useful in terms of telling you what difficulties, in terms of knowing what the difficulties you might have. And we also need to remember that there's a lot of really good practical ways of addressing all mental health problems, and that those common things will apply. You know, things about thinking about your anxiety, looking at what's actually going on, looking at other strategies, interacting with other people, leaving the house. All of these really good sense mental health well-being things that we're doing for all sorts of other conditions can also be useful in this condition.
Do you think this is a proportional label? Because, strictly speaking, the number of people who die of video gaming's problems is not high, is it, compared with other drugs?
The internet has the potential to have a huge impact on people's lives, sleeping, reverse sleep cycles, people not attending to their basic healthcare needs. If you fall and break your leg while you're playing football, you're not going to be able to carry on. People can potentially damage their health while online and might not realise it in the same way. So I do think there's a concern that we need to understand.
A point well made, Louise. Thank you very much. That's Louise Theodosiou, who's working with the Royal College of Psychiatrists in the UK. She's a consultant child and adolescent psychiatrist. And thank you also to our other guests this week, Ryan Alley, Amy Milton and Brian Roth.